This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks with Michelle Owen, Alex Crook and Sam Matterface.
Hello and welcome along to this week's edition of All Football Commentators Are Geeks with me, Michelle Owen from Sky Sports News and Soccer Saturday.
Sam Matterface from TalkSport and ITV.
Alex Crook from TalkSport, a national newspaper journalist.
This week, Jules Warren tells us what it's like being understudy to the legend that is Jeff Stelling.
And suddenly, it was August and I was doing it.
Wow.
So again, it was timing. It worked really well for me. And I'd probably done 3 or 4 years here, maybe 4 or 5 years. It's such a tough job. And I sat in the gallery and watched him do it. And I thought, I don't know if I can do this. I do not think I can do this. There's so much going on. 5 years on, I think I'm just about getting to grips with it, but it is, I mean, this is why, you know, the master, Jeff, this is why I've got so much respect for him.
Also this week, on a train with Nemanja Matic, Pep Talks, and I'll be chatting to longtime Manchester City correspondent Ian Cheeseman on FFP, the death of local radio, and what it's like covering a club that was in Division 2 and is now one of the biggest in the world.
Not even the biggest in Manchester, to be fair. Plus, what prompted Maurizio Pochettino to tell me he's taken this Tottenham team as far as he can.
All of that on the podcast that takes you behind the scenes like Raheem Sterling goes beyond the Watford offside trap on All Football Commentators Are Geeks.
Shots on a Friday.
Back of the net!
Yeah, this lot think I'm talking about the Championship match. This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks.
First of all, we should say recording this podcast this week has been a logistical nightmare due to our various work commitments. Crook's Cheltenham Jolly, me being on the EFL Awards judging panel, and Michelle, well, what is Michelle doing? Do you know? Maybe I think she's doing that deal in Strasbourg with Theresa May or something. I think she's facilitating that, I'm sure of it. I've just got off a train, actually, from London, and I shared it with Nemanja Matic's one-month-old baby. I mean, he was there too. It wasn't just me and his one-month-old baby. The baby screamed a lot, but was so cute. And Matic was doting over and taking charge and doing all sorts of daddy duties. It was really sweet. Talking of screaming babies, how are you, Crook? No hoovers or industrial crooners today?
No, all quiet, actually. It's just me, a glass of red wine, late at night, the kids are in bed. I have been in bed and have got back up because I want to talk to you so much. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
So you went to bed and then got back up to do the podcast. You hero.
I had a curry marathon. That's
what
you interrupted. Yeah.
I had an interesting couple of hours with Jane Danson last night. Wonderful Jane.
My mate.
Your mate, yeah. She is in great spirits yesterday. She had a really good show and a rap party last night for Dancing on Ice. And Anthony Cotton, who ended up dancing with my daughter, which was a bit weird. Anyway, moving on. Loads to talk about this week. And I suppose what we should do, first of all, before we do anything else, is talk about the main headlines in numbers.
The Geek Sheet. This week in numbers.
Raheem Sterling's contentious hat-trick against Watford extended Manchester City's run of being unbeaten in the 52 games the England man has scored in.
Newcastle beat Everton by 3-1, the first time the Magpies have come from 2 goals down to win a Premier League game since October 2003. That was against Fulham, when Sir Bobby Robson was the manager.
Jamie Vardy became the first Leicester player since Gary Lineker to score 100 goals for the club, as Brendan Rodgers picked up his first win as Foxes boss against Fulham.
Tottenham's top four hopes suffered another setback as Southampton came from behind to beat them. Saints have now won twice against Big Six opposition at home under Ralph Hasenhüttl. They didn't manage any wins against them under Claude Puel, Maurizio Pellegrino and Mark Hughes combined.
Luka Milivojevic's penalty was not enough to save Crystal Palace from defeat at the hands of arch foes Brighton. Since the start of last season, the Eagles have been awarded 19 spot kicks in the Premier League, which is 6 more than any other side.
David De Gea has faced 30 penalties for Manchester United and 27 of them have ended up in the net. He hasn't saved one in 3 years.
Yeah, certainly plenty of talking points from up and down the country. But what did we learn when we went into the sanctum of the tunnel?
What a headshot!
It's time for Tales from the Tunnel.
So, Crook, you're in love with Pep now, right?
I liked him last week.
You were impressed by him, you said. You know, you said there was a bit of bromance between the two of you. And he convinced you, just by talking to him, being in his presence, that they were going to retain the title as a result of that. He oozed an aura that you were impressed by.
He did. And to be fair, I had a go at his fashion sense last week. But I'm actually off to Cheltenham races this week. And I am kind of modelling myself on Pep. I've got the tweed jacket. And I know he hasn't got a tweed jacket, but I have got the milk tray style roll neck jumper underneath. Oh,
beautiful. Loving it.
Homage to Pep.
Absolutely loving it. I feel like I've been a little bit unlucky with Pep. I feel like the reporter gods have been against me. Every time I've had the opportunity to interview the most successful manager probably ever, something has come up. So I remember down at Crystal Palace, Yaya Toure scored twice. He'd been out for 100 plus days. And he really didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want to mention Yaya, but Yaya had won the game and it was cold and he didn't really want to be there. He didn't really want to talk to me after they'd lost at Leicester City and Jamie Vardy had got a hat-trick and they were defeated again. And that was December, 2 years ago. And this week, it happened to me again. Hours before I'm due to speak to him, bearing in mind you've got on well with him and you're telling me, oh, he's great, he's wonderful, and trying to make out that I make out he's always negative. These reports come out that he's been linked with a move to Juventus. Now, you can imagine what I was like when I heard that. I was like, cheers, thanks, can't wait. I can't wait to get down the tunnel. So I get down there after the game. They'd won against Watford, controversial first goal. But anyway, they got the job done in the end. The press officer comes over and he says to me straight away, with no pretext or preamble, I just want to ask you a favour. And I'm thinking, don't ask me not to ask about Juventus, whatever you do, because I'm going to. I've got to. Actually, it was something else entirely. So I was like, okay, fine, right, relax. Pep comes over, dressed all smartly, big, chunky knit grey cardigan with a little hood, dried off from the press conference. He's been in there first. That irked me because I thought I wanted to have first dibs on the Juventus line, but they've got it. They've tweeted it. You know what it's like. They've won 3-1. Sterling's got a hat-trick. I say, look, how have you done this? You've turned Raheem Sterling into a super finisher. The first season you got here, he got 23 goals, 18 now, 10 the season before. What have you done to him? You've done something amazing. What's happened? He said, it's nothing to do with me. He's got great talent, but he can do better. I said, well, like what? What do you mean? What do you mean he can do better? He's got a hat-trick. He said, did you see the first half? I was like, oh, don't play this game with me, please. Of course I saw the first half. What do you mean he can do better? He said, did you see the first half? I said, yes. He said, well, then you know. I was like, look, I know and you know, but the people that are listening to this interview, they don't know. So it would be helpful because me telling them what I think it is, he's not going to be as well sort of accepted as the guy who managed Manchester City to the title last season and the guy who picks the team, assesses the performance. So if you wouldn't mind being a little bit more sort of ebullient in your tone and just expand for me on that, that would be great. I'm still trying to be nice here, right? Anyway, in the end, he just said he needs to be better. That was his answer. He needs to be better. Great, cheers. Thanks for that. Then I ask about Juventus. Again, I'm phrasing this diplomatically. I said the Manchester City fans would have been a little bit concerned to wake up this morning to reports that you have been linked with a move to Juventus. I said, could you tell me a little bit more about that? He says, you know what the problem is? You. I'm like, what? He went, yeah, you asking that question. I said, hold on. Everyone's asked you that question. He said, what, because one guy put it on Twitter? I was like, well, in fairness, but it was one guy who earlier in the year predicted that Cristiano Ronaldo was going to go to Juventus. So he has a little bit of credibility. And do you know what he said to me? Well, he was one from one and now he's one from two. And then he walked off.
That's a good line, to be fair. I like that.
Where were you? Did you have it easier with Ralph Hasenhüttl and Maurizio Pochettino?
Oh, Ralph was buzzing, as you could imagine. Yeah, I was at Southampton to witness that incredible second half meltdown by Tottenham. Now, take nothing away from Saints. They were brilliant for that second 45 minutes. Terrific free kick goal from James Ward-Prowse again. Mei Yoshida gave me a big clue, actually, that Prowse is going to be in the next England squad because he said somebody from the FA has told him not to book a holiday. Mm. So that's about as big a clue as you can get. But as for Tottenham, I mean, they should have been out of sight by half-time. They had so many chances and just didn't really turn up for the second half. And their fans, who were sat in silence for that second 45 minutes in the away end, they must be a little bit concerned now that they might not only no longer be championship contenders, they might miss out on the top four. Three defeats in four games, no wins in four. The wheels are coming off, aren't they? Certainly domestically. And again, maybe I was a little bit like you with Pep, treating it with a little bit of trepidation because I thought, well, what sort of mood is Poch going to be in here? You know, they've lost again, a match they should have won. He was great, to be fair. And every now and again, as a reporter, when you're in the throes of a post-match interview, a manager will offer up a line that you know, as he's speaking, that is absolute gold dust. And you're almost having to stop yourself from smiling because you know he's giving you a dynamite line.
That is so true. You do. You're trying to suppress that grin after you think, back page, back page.
You know, and you're literally trying to do a fist pump without doing a fist pump. And definitely Poch after this game, he gave me one such occasion.
Maybe that is our limit. And it's a little bit sad, but maybe we need to start to think that maybe we need to operate in a different way.
What do you mean by that, operate in a different way?
No, I think I told a few months ago, I think we need to find the way to operate that we can provide the team and provide the club to try to achieve the last step. And I think we are doing a fantastic job in the last 4 or 5 years, but I think we need more. And still we are not there, and I think it's about to improve our structure and improve in the way that we work. And of course, I think after 5 years is a moment to start. If we want to put the club in the last step, like the people is talking, is of course that we need to find a way to try to provide the team and the club that tool that is going to make us to be better.
Okay, so when you hear that, what's your initial reaction and what do you do with it? Because I've got my view about what I would take from that and where I would stick it. And tell me what actually happened. What did you do?
What, in terms of where I sent the audio?
Well, you sent the audio, I take it into TalkSport, right? And yeah. I'm sure you wrote it up and sent it to the papers as well. Did anyone take it as a page lead or a back page? Or where did it go?
I didn't do it for the papers because I spoke to a couple of the newspaper boys afterwards and they said he'd sort of hinted at the same line. Now, this is an interesting point because obviously you don't hear the question that he was asked before he answers. That's because we didn't say to him, you're a bit knackered, Poch, aren't you? You know, you've taken this team as far as you can. He voluntarily offered that line up. Now, again, you might think, well, that's just a manager being emotional after defeat. No, because this is the timeline. So he's come into the tunnel. He's done his television interviews. He comes over to do radio, but he can't do radio because we're speaking to, first of all, Yoshida. So he goes back to the press conference, does that. Then he comes back again, pokes his head around the door to do radio. We're doing Ralph Hasenhüttl, so he can't do it then. The press officer, to be fair, we thought, well, he's not going to come back. He said he's just gone to get changed. So he's gone for a shower. He smelt amazing, by the way.
as good as Virgil van Dijk.
I would say so, yeah. Maybe even as good as Michael Carrick, who is rumoured to be the nicest smelling man in football.
Oh, no, Van Dijk's overcome him. Ever since getting that massive pay rise and going to Liverpool, he now has, like, you know, the ultra creed.
Well, the odour that Poch was putting out was, you know, overwhelming, to be fair. But what I'm saying is, so he's had a long time between the match finishing, doing his TV interviews, doing these newspaper interviews, presumably having a shower, changing from his suit into a tracksuit. And he's had a lot of time to think about, right, this is what I'm going to say. And he wanted to put out a message, no question about it. And the message clearly is, please, Daniel, leave me.
Daniel, leave me.
Might be Poch leaving him.
Please release me, lead me go.
I think that's called a Freudian slip. But he's saying, give me some flipping money.
He's not going to Real Madrid now, though, is he? Because Zinedine Zidane's popped his head up again now and he's signed a contract till 2022. So that avenue is now closed. So there's only one place for him to go, and that's Manchester United. And let's be honest about it. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is getting that job. So he's going to have to stay.
Well, this might be also why...
Unless he goes to Chelsea. Madder things have happened.
You never know. But this might be why he's been so frustrated. We've had the Mike Dean incident. We've had these comments now. It might not just be because Tottenham aren't giving him any money to spend. Mm. I think he was going to Manchester United. I think he's held talks with Manchester United. I think the deal was pretty much agreed. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has come in and blown that out of the water. Now he's thinking, crikey, I'm stuck at Spurs. We're moving to a new stadium. Who knows how that's going to pan out for us? the chairman's not going to give me any money. What am I going to do?
I must admit,
his master plan is in tatters.
When I listened to that audio and you sent it to me, I think on Saturday night after the game, and you and I discussed it, I thought that's not the first time that he has given Levy more than a nudge. I mean, this is now an elbow in the ribs. It's not like a little shove in the right direction. It's the third time, I think, now that he's said in recent months, we've got to do something about this. Now, I've asked nicely a couple of times, and now I'm saying it big style. Because maybe he'll end up just walking away and saying, do you know what? I've done what I can do, and I asked you for help, and you didn't give it to me. I'll take my chances on the open market. Because the issue is that if Spurs now end up going into, not I wouldn't say free fall, because that would be unfair, but if they started to dip because of the investment in the stadium, didn't invest in new players over the summer, and he isn't rewarded with the opportunity to bring in numbers to strengthen what is a stretch squad, let's be honest about it. The first 11 is great, the rest of it is okay. Then his reputation is under threat because he's had some great, he's a great experience at Spurs up until this point. Now they keep falling away at the end of seasons. They may end up falling away at the end of this season. I hope for him personally that doesn't happen, but it might. If he then goes on to take them into next season, they finish fifth or sixth, all of a sudden it becomes a team in decline and he's going to be tarnished with that brush and he won't want to be involved in that. He's a winner. No, if you've read his book, you know that he is out to do one thing and one thing only, and that is develop a team for the long term to be serial winners. He wants to achieve that. And if he can't achieve it at Tottenham, I think he'll step away, even if it is without gainful employment elsewhere, and take his chances on the open market.
I agree. And I think if he walked away now or at the end of the season, I'm not saying that is going to happen because I think he will at least give Levy the chance to put his money where his mouth is. If he did walk away now, his stock is still pretty high. Mm. And when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gets sacked in 6 months' time, when it all goes wrong at Man United, he would probably walk into that job. But as you say, the longer he stays at Spurs and the more they fall behind, because they are behind Liverpool and Manchester City, they will fall behind United when they spend again. Chelsea aren't going to be as bad next season as they have been for most of this. The further they fall behind, the more that is going to be levelled against him. And again, it will keep coming up that he's never won a trophy. What's he ever done? And I think there's two issues here. One, he's frustrated that Tottenham are not getting the results that they are capable of. They should beat Southampton, let's be honest, even with that squad.
Yeah.
And two, it is now damaging his brand, the brand Pochettino. Even though, you know, he smells sublime.
He does indeed. Other things that happened this week, I was on the EFL judging panel and was talking a lot about the laws of the game and VAR next year and how it's sort of going to affect our football matches. Discussed in detail the decision which led to the Manchester City goal, the first one, just after half-time with Raheem Sterling, with a member of the PGMOL. In fact, I've spoken to a couple of referees about it now. And it certainly should have been a goal. I mean, I don't get why it was ruled out in the first place. It didn't make any sense to me. Adrian Holmes, the assistant on the far side, who should be the arbiter of the offside law, said it was offside. Paul Tierney overruled him. Don't get it. Clearly, Sterling is challenging for the ball. The idea that Jan Mack cleared it onto him and it then popped over the goalkeeper. I mean, even if there's a half-truth in that, the fact is Sterling was challenging for the ball, and as soon as you do that, you are offside if the ball had been played to you when you were in offside position prior to that. So there's no way that that should have counted that goal. But also spoke to a couple of other people this week about the situation at Bolton Wanderers and how there could be a league first by the end of the week, where the contracts that the players have got at the moment, they're in dispute with the owner, Ken Anderson, who promised them that they would be paid by last week and that there'll be a takeover at the club by last Friday. It didn't happen. He said, if it doesn't happen, I'll pay you out of my own pocket by Tuesday. Obviously, it's got to today. They haven't been paid by Ken Anderson. Now they've got till Thursday, by which time, if they haven't got their money by then, they will be out of contract in effect. Their contracts will be null and void. They'll have to wait. They can give 14 days notice. So on Thursday, Bolton Wanderers could have a squad of players. As I understand it, not the whole squad is going to do it, but some are going to hand in their notice, the 14-day notice, and then they'll be free to sign contracts with whoever they want after that point, which is interesting, isn't it? Because if they're free agents, that means they can potentially sign for anyone in that division and that might sort of disrupt the integrity of that competition as well. So it's a strange one, but that is a real possibility. They're really unhappy, the players at Bolton Wanderers. I've spoken to a couple today, and they are, you know, been let down. We talk about the governance of the football clubs and how things have got to work in the future, and we bemoan some owners and for not releasing the purse strings, and we've just been talking about Daniel Levy. But, you know, clubs that go under and stop paying their players and their staff, that is a real problem that football's got to wrestle with and get control of, I think.
It's interesting because that came very close to happening at Portsmouth when they were going through their financial problems. I remember writing the story for the national papers that if the players weren't paid by a certain date, that they were within their rights to tear up their contracts. And I think one of the Bolton players, Gary O'Neill, was actually on the playing staff at Pompey when that happened. So he's had experience of this before.
Interesting. Okay, so coming up in the next few minutes, we'll be talking to today Julian Warren, who is the guy who hosts Soccer Special on Sky Sports News. He's been sitting down for a lengthy chat with Michelle Owen. And later on in the programme, I'll be talking to Ian Cheeseman, who was the voice of BBC Radio Manchester's Manchester City coverage for 23 years. And he talks to us not just about Manchester City. He does talk a little bit about Manchester City, but what he talks about is how local radio brings football to the supporters of a club and how it's changed over the years. And with the developments in the way that the commercial radio stations, the local commercial radio stations have been owned in the last few years, how the landscape's changed and the impact going forward and the upshot of podcasts and independent programs and stuff like that. So it's actually quite a fascinating listen, so stick around for that. It's a little bit later on. If you want to get in touch with us at any time, you can do it's at AFC Gigs on Twitter and at AFC Gigs on Instagram as well.
It's all over, I think. No.
Subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts and all major podcast platforms. This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks.
Thank you for listening to the latest edition of the All Football Commentators Are Geeks podcast. We sent Michelle this week to interview one of television's brightest stars. It's Soccer Special's Jules Warren.
I'm joined by Jules Warren. Did your name come as Julian when we go on air?
I have to be Julian on air. Yeah.
Officially.
I haven't been
I've Julian. Never known anyone call you that.
No, everyone calls me Jules, but I'm Julian when my mum was telling me off. But I've been Jules. But no, I'm Julian officially. Everyone calls me Jules. So you know to call me Jules.
Jules, yeah. When it comes up as Julian Warren, it's like, who's that? So, presenter of Soccer Special.
Yes.
You are the face of Soccer Special.
Yeah.
And I said I was going to tell you something. Well, I've just been upstairs with Jeff and the Soccer Saturday crew. And Jeff said, so we're at an event this week on Wednesday.
Right.
And it was like a Soccer Saturday thing where you met people, they came and shook your hand, had a photo, and yeah, it was about 100 of them.
Yeah.
And they all came past. Nice to meet you, Jeff. Nice to meet you. Photos with each of the boys. And then one comes up and goes, oh, I thought Jules would be here. And Jeff was
that's
like,
a first.
Thank you very much. Yeah, but you say that. But every start of the season, everyone says they cannot wait for the midweek soccer specials because you are a staple of it.
Oh, that's very kind. I love the midweeks. I think they're just, because we can show the goals, we'll start from the championship.
Well, yeah.
I think that's brilliant. You get the Champions League nights. You get some Premier League midweeks as well. Jeff does a few too. But I think they're great. I mean, yeah, that's nice to hear. Because most people who walk past you in the street and go, you're the, I'm sure I know you. Do I know you from, yeah, you're the, that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
I normally get.
Where do I know you from? Nice. Do I know you?
You sure that wasn't my mum at this event?
He didn't say. Let's get back to the start then.
Yeah.
Did you do the sort of university thing, the student radio thing?
Yeah, I did all that. Hospital radio. I think it's sort of similar stuff to you do. I think hospital radio. Well, it all started when I was like, you know, 5, making radio shows in my room and all that.
Oh,
sort
I
of
did
thing.
That. Yeah. Did you do it in a wardrobe?
Yeah,
with a little tape
with
recorder.
A dodgy cassette. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then hospital radio. Went to university. Started doing the student radio. I think I did a sort of sports show. Do you know, I can't even remember. It was so bad. I can't even remember.
Got any tapes
like.
From it?
Probably somewhere. If I haven't burnt them. So I did all that, yeah, and that was at Sheffield University, did a bit of, and that gave me the bug, and I thought, yeah, I could do this. Mm. And then went to the post-grad broadcast diploma for a year after university.
Where did you do that?
Central Lancashire, Preston, which was a really good course at the time, and that was like full-on, sort of, you know, actually like a proper job, and a TV studio and radio studio. And we used to get guest editors who'd come in, and you'd do like news shows and like a news day. And one guy in particular came in called John Pickford, who was head of news at Key 103, what was Piccadilly in Manchester.
Yep.
And for some reason, took a liking to me and did a bit of sort of work experience with him and then freelance work. Started once I finished university. And then I eventually got my first job there. And that was a great place to start, you know, Manchester.
Big station.
Oh, big, big station. Doing news and sport. I had to do news at the start as well. But I always wanted to major on sport. And then, yeah, I found myself working alongside Dan Walker, who was the head of sport, an old mate of mine, and I was like his sidekick. And went along to games. We were doing Bolton games, Man City games, sometimes the odd Manchester United game.
Was it co-coms then?
No, we did a sort of... we didn't have too many commentary matches. It was more sort of around the grounds. So it was like a soccer specials type thing. So he'd send me off to matches and do inserts into the show and interviews afterwards. And then, yeah, and it all went on from there. So
And you've both obviously been very successful. We've had Dan Walker on this podcast.
Yeah, he's a great guy, Dan.
Who do you support? Are you allowed to say?
Well, I keep it quiet on air just because you never know when it might come back to bite you. But I'm an Everton fan.
Oh, he said it now.
Lifelong Everton fan, yeah.
So that's because you're from...
From the world, just down the road, yeah. So.
And when you came to Sky, did they say you can't say who you support?
No, I was never told I couldn't. I've always just chosen not to. I don't think Everton are too offensive. I don't think anyone gets too offended by Everton.
Mid-table mediocrity.
Yeah, correct. Thanks very much, Michelle.
I can't speak.
So. I think if you're a Man United fan or a Liverpool fan or someone like that, if you say something, we know what football fans are like. It's perceived to be biased and people never forget. And that's fine. I'm cool with that. I understand it. So I just go on about it. So, I am an Everton fan. Occasionally, I'm outed. I think Paul Walsh was the first one to out me on air. I don't try and hide it, but I just don't broadcast it.
Yeah, exactly. When did you come to Sky then? How did that come about?
So, my main job after Manchester, I went to Hallam FM in Sheffield, which was like a sister station to Key 103, as their head of sport. I had 4 years there. And that's where I met my wife.
And what was she doing?
She was doing news. So she was on the news team.
Like a sport news power couple.
We were the Richard and Judy of local radio. so we used to do the drive time news and sport bulletins together.
Oh,
and
that's
our eyes met over a microphone, and you know. so we met there, and after 4 years, I had a house, she had a house, we got together, and we'd always wanted to try London, and she always wanted to do London. So we quit our jobs at Hallam. We'd had a brilliant time with really good mates. We had a lovely time, but it was just time for a change, you know. Quit our jobs, sold my house, went travelling around the world for 6 months.
Wow.
With the intention of coming down to London. When we got back, we'd done a bit of networking before we went. I came in and had a meeting here. Got back, put those contacts out again, and somehow I managed to blag a screen test. I'd never had one before. I didn't know what I was doing.
So you'd never been in front of camera before?
I'd never been in front of
no
camera.
Way.
I'd never, ever done 1 minute of TV. No. Right, I've done like 8 or 9 years of radio and around the ground.
We're both from radio, and it's such a good
I would say to anyone wanting to get into TV, I mean, radio's a brilliant medium by itself, but I think you cannot go wrong with starting in radio. You learn how to use your voice. You learn, you know, you don't have to worry about what you look like. It's just all about what you're saying. So, from doing Hallam FM, quit our jobs, went around the world, came on to London, got a screen test, and like 2 weeks later, I was on air.
Wow.
It felt lucky. I think someone had left and they needed a new presenter for sports news. And crazily, they gave me the chance. And 10 years on, which I can't believe it's 10 years. 10 years on, I'm still here.
Wow. Do you remember your first... who were you on with? What was your slot?
Do you know what? I was on... Yeah, it was a late shift.
10 till midnight?
10 till midnight.
That's what they used to be?
Yes, they were. They make us work harder now, don't they?
Yeah, after you double now.
Yeah. And it was with the late, great David Bobin. Who was an absolutely brilliant man.
Did he mentor you?
Yeah, he did. He that night for a start, he was absolutely brilliant. Because I was shaking, I was sweating. I'd never done TV. Remember, I'd done one screen test. Sum up, didn't know what I was doing. Blagged my way through it. And
so you didn't start on bulletins?
No,
sports bulletins.
Not in those days. They just put you straight on.
Wow.
Yeah, Andy Cairns and Karen Wilmerson were like, just let's see, sink or swim, and you go. I thank them for that because that's in a way the best way to do it. You just got to do it, haven't you?
Yeah.
So I went on with David, who was just a great broadcaster, a lovely guy, very experienced. We call him the Mighty Oak because he was just that big, dependable man you could lean on. And he got me through, held my hand metaphorically. He wouldn't have held my hand because it was sweating. So I got through, and that was the first one. I can picture it now. It was in the old building, which sadly is no more. And it was the most petrified I've ever been in my life. And David was brilliant, and and that was it. I was up and running, and but it's funny, those first years, all you want is nothing to happen, no breaking news, 2 hours of everything written for you, scripts. Now, of course, you want stuff to happen. I want things
it's
to happen.
It's funny because we came in tonight, we're like, oh, good, it's a busy one.
Yeah, lots
whereas
of matches.
You're right. A year ago, I'd have been like, I want nothing to happen.
Yeah.
I remember one of my first shifts was with you down here.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. It was 5 hours. It was the World Cup final.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's about 3-4 weeks in.
Yeah, it was one of your first ones.
But my first one was Adam Leventhal, and he was as good as gold, but it was a Sunday morning. So we just went around in a loop and it was fine.
Yes.
But how did you go from Sky Sports News to Soccer Special then?
Again, it's been the right place at the right time because I'd been doing live football. I was doing the Republic of Ireland games, did a couple of years of that. Was on for the famous Thierry Henry handball moment. Was also starting to do some Football League games, but then there were changes here at Sky and Ed Chamberlain started to do the live football, and he'd always done the soccer specials. And I think I'd been shadowing him. I can't remember how it happened, but I think they'd asked me to start shadowing him. And before I knew it, this change happened, and suddenly it was August and I was doing it.
Wow.
So again, it was timing. It worked really well for me. And I'd probably done 3 or 4 years here, maybe 4 or 5 years. But it was, you know, it's such a tough job, and I'd sat in the gallery and watched him do it. And I just thought, I don't know if I can do this. I do not think I can do this. There's so much going on. 5 years on, I think I'm just about getting to grips with it. But it is, I mean, this is why, you know, the master, Jeff, this is why I've got so much respect for him, because he makes it look so easy. And yes, he's been doing it a long time, but the ease with which he makes it look, it is not. It is a tough, tough job. And I'm, you know, after 5 years, finally, I'm getting to grips with it. But yeah, it just, again, so it worked out well for me. Just right place, right time, really.
That live football you did a few Republic of Ireland games and the Football League. Any regrets about not doing more of that? Would you like to do more of that?
Yeah, I would like to, but, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, and also I've got my Sky Sports News duties, which I still absolutely love doing. Soccer special, you know, some double headers, the odd Saturday for Jeff as well, on the international weekends. So it's, when would you do it, really? Of course, there's lots of brilliant people here who all want to be doing live football. So, you know, I'm very lucky to do what I do, so I'm not trying not to be greedy, but obviously if there was live matches, I'd love doing that. It's the one thing I miss about doing what I do, is I don't get too much live football. Because, you know, it's all in Sky Sports News, it's within these four walls. Soccer special is in the same studio, so you're watching, talking about football, it's on a monitor, but I don't get too much live football. You don't see the whites of people's eyes and the sounds and the smells of live football. I could do more, you know, outside of my work hours, but with two young children as well, I'm sort of doing the whole balancing act of daddy and working. So I don't have many spare hours to be travelling the country on my days off. So hopefully, as the kids grow older,
you take them
more
with you.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to get them into the football. But I can, you know, there might be a chance for me to start doing a little bit more. But at the moment, it's fine.
It's sort of unthinkable to think of Soccer Saturday without Jeff.
I know.
Isn't it?
I know.
But one day, that is going to happen. And when it happens, is that what you would like to do?
Jeff's going to go on forever. Don't worry about that. It's so hard, isn't it?
I mean, surely. I mean, for me, I think for anyone, it's an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah, of course. It's the, you know, doing what I do now, it's the dream. Well, it's the dream job, isn't it?
You are. It's like if there was a line of succession.
Well, I guess I'm in a good place, but you just don't know what would happen, do you? But I would absolutely love to. Of course, I would. And
because you do it every week. You do it almost every week anyway.
I know. I do, and the Tuesday and Wednesdays are. I mean, the only difference is they're half the length, but they are intense. And the one thing you don't get is the chance to chat. At the start, you get your 10-minute build-up, and that's it, and then you're on. So, you know, half of the show on a Saturday, isn't it, is chatting about the games and looking at and the features that the guys do as well. So, no, listen, I'd love to, but I've always said that as and when that day comes, if I got the chance, I mean, taking over from Jeff on that show is like replacing Sir Alex at Old Trafford. You know, it is the biggest of shoes to fill because he is the best in the business. So I think it'd be tough, but if I ever got that chance, oh, yeah, of course I'd love it.
But people, like I said, people know. So I know Jeff does the odd one, but because you do soccer specials, people know that's almost Jules' show now. That's how people think of it.
It's really nice if people see it that way. Yeah, it is nice. But yeah, I mean, I love doing it. I don't take it for granted. And yeah, if people enjoy it, that's great. And as I say, it's such a buzz, isn't it? I mean, you're working on the grounds.
So I did my first Envision when you were on 4 years ago now. Can you believe that?
Is it 4 years?
So I've been on, this is 5 years on Soccer Saturday.
Really?
Used to do the ICNs.
Yeah.
And then I remember it was Yeovil v, I think, Dagenham and Redbridge.
Right.
And I was like, oh God, that's a blimmin' hard team to say, isn't it? Ben? And I remember you throwing to me, and you talk about being nervous on your first, oh God, I was like, I swear I can hear my heartbeat.
Well, the hardest thing for you as well is because you've got to be so succinct, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, so every word counts. I can waffle on, but you've got to...
Keep it short.
Yeah. I'm used to that from the producer. Yeah. But it's the best show to be involved in, isn't it?
And it's the best.
And you know, those 7:30 on air, quick chat, games underway, and on the busy nights when we've got 40 or 50 games, I don't breathe. And I come off
air. How do you do it?
Well, I don't know. I come off air at 10 o'clock feeling like I've been beaten about the head. I'm done in. I'm upset. So I don't know how Jeff does six. One thing I'll do if I did ever get Saturday for build up my stamina, because I mean, 6 hours on air.
Yeah, it's a long broadcast.
It's a long, long time. I'm done in after 3 hours, you know.
Well, yeah, but you say that you do 5 hours on a Sunday on Sky Sports.
Four hours with you tonight, yeah. Not with you, I mean, that's why it feels long. I'm just.
four hours with Michelle tonight.
Come on, come on.
But you have, let's say, a full night of EFL action and Champions League, which happens every now and then. How on earth do you prep for all of those games? I find it hard enough prepping for one game.
The hard thing is...
Because you always have something to say.
Well, yeah, I always... I over-prep. I always do that because I'd rather over prep than under prep. And there's a lot of people who probably do it differently and like to be more spontaneous and just go with the flow. I always like to have that safety blanket of having far too much. I probably use 15%, 20% of the stuff I prep, but I'd rather have that than go in and suddenly have a gap to fill and have nothing to say. I always think the day will come when for some reason all the ISTNs go down, all the feeds go down. There'll be something will happen and I'll just have me and my four guests and I don't know, the video will go down. So I'd just rather have information there at my fingertips. So I'll spend the day before prepping all day and then come in sort of 11, 12 on the day
itself.
It's a
long day, isn't it?
It's a long day. And you get to 7 o'clock and you've been in front of a computer screen all day and you think, now I've got to go live and do it. But I think I just like to have all that there. It's a lot of prep, but I enjoy the prep. I enjoy when you find a little nugget and a great stat. And, that's a brilliant one. So say I've got all my teams, I've got my template that I do each time, and I've got all my reporters and my grounds and league tables ready to go. So, but I think that's the way I like to do it. Everyone's different, but I know Jeff does loads of prep.
Oh yeah, whenever I see Jeff on I sometimes see him on a Friday if we're in on a Friday, and he has like the local paper and things like that. So he gets local papers and goes on. He's, it's what you do, isn't it? That's where you find the best.
Yeah,
info.
you do, and there's some online as well now. I mean, the local websites. And
they're great, aren't they?
They're brilliant, and all the clubs themselves are getting more and more aware of that, and they're putting great little stats out. And, Opta and the Sky Sports stats as well. A great guy called Trevor, who gives us.
So is he in your ear on a Tuesday night?
He's in my ear. I've got three or four different voices in my ear.
See, I don't know how you deal with that, because the max we have on Sky Sports News is 2.
Yes.
So, three if you get a DA. But how do you cope with the main producer telling you to hurry up?
Yeah.
The director telling you where you're going next, I suppose, with the producer. And then you've probably got someone counting, and then you've probably got your stats as well, and probably someone else.
Yeah, and then you've got the four guests who are trying to annoy you to get away to your left. Oh, yeah. And so depending on who you got in, of course, they love all that, don't they? It's the sort of thing when you first did it, again, that's why I found it so hard. And that's why it's taken me a while to be able to do all that. And then to be able to do the video printer coming in, stay on top of all your notes, because it's basically I'm writing down every goal as well, and I've got 10 sheets of paper whilst trying to think of my next question, while being told where to go. It's why sometimes I'll be in vision, and you might see me stalling a bit, and I'm waiting for the director to repeat where she's just told me, or he's just told me.
No, you're great at that. Do you know what you do?
What?
Right.
Right, yeah.
Let's slight go pause. To...
and they now know that's their sign for them. Oh, because they might have told me twice, but because I've been doing four other things, and writing down, and two goals have just gone in, and... Ian Dowley just shouted at me.
But you never know. I only know because I'm so used to you being in my...
That's the key,
isn't it? Well, I sort of switch off. Mm. But if I hear you go right, I'm like, oh, is he coming to me?
Yeah.
Because sometimes we get a late shout.
Yes, of course.
So that's my cue, actually, to know. George needs to go somewhere. Could it be us? Because sometimes we'll be on standby for ages.
Yes.
And you're trying to watch the game as well.
Yes, I'd love to see it. I've never had the chance to see it from your point of view. I should do that one day.
I've been in the gallery once.
Right.
So I've seen the producer lose his rag. And I've seen all the various people and what they do.
Yeah.
I think our side is a lot easier. Tell me about the time when Merce wouldn't stop calling you Jeff.
Oh, poor Merce. The thing is, I feel for him because he's there every Saturday and 6 hours every Saturday and sat alongside Jeff. And so and it becomes like second nature to say Jeff, which is fine. And I don't get to be on with Merce very often now, so I love it when I am. And there was one night particularly when he just really seemed to struggle. He was just in full-on Jeff mode. But I forgive him for that. And I think I've had it from other people as well, so it's fine.
Who would you say is the best, or not the best, that's not fair. Who is your favourite panel person, if you had to pick? I know that's a hard one.
It is hard.
Yeah, we've started getting women on the season as well. How do you think that's gone?
Absolutely fantastic. Mm. And I've worked with Sue probably more than anybody else.
She's
Smith.
Great, isn't she?
She's absolutely brilliant.
So knowledgeable.
Fantastic. Knows
and
the game inside out.
A good broadcaster as well.
Great broadcaster. Lovely person.
Yeah.
Everton fan too, which helps. but she's been great. No, and I think it's been a great introduction, honestly. Sue's been in. We had Alex Scott in. Emma Hayes, the Chelsea manager, who's a real character. She's great fun. It's so hard. Look, all the guests we get in, are all fantastic. And we get new people in who have been trying out. Current footballers. I mean, Michael Dawson, who's been doing really well. Curtis Davis was in the other day. Then you have your regulars like your Neil Mellors and your Matt Murrays and your Ian Dowries and your Alan McAnally's. I always enjoy the Mickey taking with Alan.
Alan McAnally.
Yeah.
Do you know sometimes he just walks into the gallery before he goes on air and starts just shouting at you? And I'm like, who's that, Alan McAnally?
Well, he still likes to think it's his show.
Yeah. About him.
Yeah.
Did you not know that?
But, I love Alan. They're all great, and the thing is, they've all been great with me because. When I first started doing the job, they knew me maybe as a Sky Sports news presenter, yeah. but they didn't really know much about me. But they've all, none of them have been difficult with me or awkward with me. If I ask a silly question, if a million things go on in my ear and the question that comes out my mouth is a load of rubbish, they'll turn it into a decent question. But they all know, they get it. And that's why it's such a privilege to work on it.
But also you, one of your roles there is sometimes we have new guests on and perhaps they're not as experienced as others. How do you bring out the best in them?
I think it's just making them feel comfortable, isn't it? So I'll always try and give a few more minutes to them when we're just about to go on air, make sure they're happy technically with what they're doing, because it's quite complicated. They've got to be faders turning down, and you know, they listen to commentary, they listen to me, they listen to the director.
What if they're doing a game, and we've all done it, but they sort of freeze? So, and so what they're doing is you've gone, whoever, Bob, you know, there's been a goal in the Manchester United game, what happened? And they go, yeah. And you can see they're watching the replay or whatever, and they're trying to think what to say. What do you do then?
I always try and give them a second or two, because I don't want to start jumping in straight away. Yeah. I think it's only fair to give people a couple of seconds. But then we've seen some people take to it like a duck to water. Other people find it harder, and it is hard. Mm. Some people find it easy for whatever reason. So I always think, don't jump in too soon. But obviously it's a fast-moving show, so you can't be waiting too long. And I will try and maybe talk, if I can see the shot, if I've got the match-up, I'll try and talk through and encourage them and sort of try and, I don't know, help them with what they're trying to say. But it's so difficult for them, doing that discipline. If you've never done it before, or you've been at grounds, and here suddenly you're watching the pictures, you're listening to me, you're listening to the commentary, you can hear the director, it's a lot for them to take on. Mm. And so I will always try and be supportive if I can. But
yeah, you always are. You always are. Jules, thank you so much for coming on.
We're done.
We're done. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I've had a lovely time, thank you. We better go and prep for our shift.
Yeah, we have got to be on air shortly, so we'll go and do that. You can add that you're a loyal listener to the Geeks podcast.
I am.
Good friend of Sam Matterface.
Yes, I've had some fun times with Matterface. In fact, him and Crook, I won't talk about it now, because what goes on in Munich stays in Munich, but we had a good weekend there a few years back.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I think I've heard a few tales, the less said about that, the better.
But thanks for asking me on. And so you're doing Norwich-Swansea tonight, and I'm doing Yeovil... Lincoln.
Yeah, basically I picked the game that I want
right,
tonight.
Okay, that's fine.
And that's why I like being on with you.
And if I do the golf, you'd Super League, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
There we are. He's giving me Super League, which I don't know a lot about. Thanks,
that'll
Jules.
Be fun then. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Jules.
I love Jules. He was part of what we used to call, I don't know if we should have called it this, the Fresh Meat Gang, when I joined Sky Sports News, because we joined in the same summer. Jules and I, there's a few of us sort of youngsters as we were then. God, that was a long time ago.
Do you remember when he fell asleep at midday when we took him to the Oktoberfest in Munich?
Yeah, he did, didn't he? And disappeared
face down on a grass verge and then suddenly sprung back into life about 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, he disappeared for like 8 hours and then just came out and went, anyone want a drink?
Amazing.
Well, that Oktoberfest 2010, was it? Maybe something
one
like
of
that.
The best weekends of my life. It was amazing.
Funny. It was funny. We go back a long way, and he's a really good lad. And I say that we start at the same time. We were, at the time, the younger guys on Sky Sports News, and now he's one of the elder statesmen there, isn't he? I mean, certainly it has been 10, 15 years since we were on together, but great to hear from him on the pod. Coming next, we'll be talking to a veteran local radio commentator about the current trend of local radio regression.
Some people are on the pitch, they think it's all over.
The only people you know that can legitimately buy a pair of binoculars. This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks.
Now, last week, Global, a massive local commercial radio owner, announced almost 40 local breakfast shows would be replaced by one centralised national show. The trend in commercial radio for less and less localness has seen radio commentary of local football clubs almost disappear from our radios. A really sad situation. With that in mind, Sam caught up with Ian Cheeseman, a former BBC Radio Manchester commentator, to discuss this and the difference between City now and then.
I'm sitting in the fabulous Manchester City press area with the one and only Ian Cheeseman, who spent 23 years as the voice of Manchester City for BBC Radio Manchester. And now you're the owner of an independent podcast, Forever Blue. You do vlogging, YouTube stuff, and it'd be interesting to sort of get your views not only on how Manchester City have changed over the course of your 23-year career, but also how broadcasting locally especially has changed. Because you're a big part of the rise of City over the last 10 years. But what's happened? What's changed here in terms of radio rights and the way things are done?
Well, when I grew up, I listened to a lot of City games on the radio, and local radio was my preferred choice for listening because I wanted to listen to something that was partisan. And when I became a commentator myself, I very deliberately chose to be partisan. Not biased, there's a difference between biased and partisan, because if I was commentating on an incident and the audience didn't trust me and afterwards saw the same incident on TV or wherever nowadays on social media, and I'd misled them and said something because I was biased, then they wouldn't trust me. But they wanted me in local radio, and what I wanted to listen to as a listener on local radio was something that was partisan, that was unashamedly rooting for the team that I was supporting, and I liked that. Yeah. But equally, I always wanted them to tell me the truth.
That is a big difference, isn't it? Because some people say, oh, you know, especially local radio, it's biased. It's not. That's not how it's supposed to be. And I worked on the same principle when I was in Portsmouth. You know, you've got to be able to believe what someone is saying. You don't want to mislead them.
Absolutely not. I've listened to plenty of local radio commentaries where the commentator, I'm obviously not going to name any names, and say, oh, I took his legs away there. That was disgraceful. Should have been sent off. And then I watch it a little bit later and I think, he didn't even foul him. What are you talking about? And that might work on radio when you can't see it for a while. But sooner or later, you're going to get found out. So my motivation was to be partisan, but to be absolutely honest. So if City were to get a penalty, unashamedly I'm a City supporter, and they got a penalty and I was describing it, I'd say things like, potentially, not always, obviously, all the time, but the guy goes down in the penalty area and I go, that was never a penalty. I'll take it. Hopefully this gives City an opportunity now to take the lead or extend the lead. But come on, let's be honest. He never touched him. He got away with one there. You know, and I would say that unashamedly, and I think people respected me for that, and that was always my modus operandi. And personally, I mean, commentary is the thing I was most passionate about. I wrote a book called Best Job in the World, which, whilst reporting on football and being a City fan, was the best job in the world, full stop. Actually being a commentator on the radio, which is my preferred option, was the one I enjoyed the most, because it allowed me to be passionate, but also I have a great sort of another word, I can't think of another word for passion, but a passion for being accurate. So I'm very meticulous in my commentary. And obviously, I'm not saying this just to massage your ego, Sam, but you, I've listened to you come along as a commentator on radio, television, now doing Dancing on Ice. And there are three, and I don't ridicule that in any way, shape or form, because there are three very, very different skills. And one of the things that impresses me about you is that, having listened to you as a radio commentator, you've always got radio and you've been very descriptive in the way that you've conveyed that radio commentary, as well as the passion. Then on television, it's a completely different skill set.
It's a different skill set. It's kind of you to say. But I think the most important thing for me is the grounding in radio. Whatever I've done has always been come from that first, you know, 1992, being in a hospital radio station, just being around it and learning it. I think those skills are really important. Local radio, obviously, I mentioned before, I did it, and you've done it for many, many years. But the last few weeks, we've seen lots of local radio sort of not disappear, but be swollen into big conglomerates. So big organisations, Bauer Global, they're now the owners of the majority, if not all, of the local radio stations in the country commercially. Does that give more license to BBC local radio stations to get involved in football? Because the death of local commentary rights have disappeared over years anyway.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, the trouble with BBC local radio is it's being squeezed because of budget cuts, because of the different ways that they're now trying to sort of look at the future. When I was at the BBC, those cuts were already happening. Football clubs demand a fee to have the rights to commentate, and those fees sometimes are beyond local radio. So if you're talking purely about commentary, I think the focus on BBC local radio, although I don't represent them or work anymore for them, is more and more towards the smaller clubs who don't get as much coverage in the world media. So obviously Premier League is blanket coverage. We all know, even though we pretend we don't know, that you can watch streams of games illegally So therefore the function of radio is not quite as important as it once was. However, go outside of the top flight and clubs like Bolton Wanderers, Wigan Athletic, and obviously people could be listening here all over the country, Gillingham, whoever it might be, they're not as well served by all that sort of thing. So BBC local radio definitely has a stronger function, I believe, to cover those teams.
Do you believe that local radio journalists, local people, are more likely to scrutinise a club like Manchester City or Manchester United because they spend so much time on that patch rather than someone coming in and coming out, as happens with us?
Yeah, there's an area of expertise that comes from being a local radio reporter who lives and breathes the club. And often, not always, but often the reporter has been a lifelong fan, as I was. So that makes you want to scrutinise it even more thoroughly and ask the questions that national radio, and this is no offence to national radio, I get that they have a different remit.
But sometimes we don't have time.
Absolutely. You, as a reporter, have got to be across all 20 Premier League clubs. You know, when you speak on the radio, you're being asked questions about Fulham and who they should sign in the summer, etc. I don't have to worry about that sort of thing in the roles that I've been doing in local radio, but I can ask questions that you wouldn't think to ask that are more specific to Manchester City.
Of course, if you get the chance to ask them, because there's sometimes when, you know, some idiot from the national radio station will ask a question of the manager and he'll walk off halfway through before you've even got a chance. Now, who would have done that?
Sam is referring to how many times in the tunnel when particularly Manuel Pellegrini took umbrage at something that Sam would say, leaving me as the local radio reporter nowhere to go. But no, generally speaking, you can bring them to account better. And they respect you as well. Because they know that your face is familiar every single press conference, every single game.
Does that role now fall to podcasts like yours as opposed to local commercial radio or local BBC radio?
It's definitely changing. I'm not sure whether generally podcasters and vloggers and people like that get the same access that journalists get. They're still very much on the outside. Now, because of my 23-year history with the BBC and because of my long-standing relationship with fans and with the club, I'm one of the exceptions because I'm still at the press conferences and I am still in a position where I can ask a question should I want to. But generally, there are that many different podcasts that attach themselves to each club. If you start letting in 10 podcasters, then, you know, there's no room for everybody. Now, that might change again because we've seen or are seeing the demise of newspapers. Sales are not what they used to be. That's still the financial model that they have of how they bring in a lot of their income. So even though I contribute, for example, to the Manchester Evening News podcast, I'm not employed by the Manchester Evening News, but I talk to those guys a lot and I hear about their concerns and worries going forward about the local newspapers and how they're going to survive. Ironically, in the bigger picture, you talked about Global and all the other big conglomerates that are amalgamating and losing some of their local input. I was approached a couple of weeks ago by somebody who wants to reinvigorate community radio and call it local radio, with a possibility that I might get involved in that, and some of the more local newspapers like the Advertisers. So there now is a reaction. How much purchase they'll get and how much they will grow back again remains to be seen, but they see a gap in the market and they want to try to exploit that. So that could be another direction that local reporting, if you like, goes in.
It's fascinating. Before we let you go, and we've probably gone on for longer than we anticipated, but a quick word on the FFP, UEFA, Premier League, FIFA and FA investigations into Manchester City. Obviously, when you read the emails, it doesn't look particularly good, but the way they've been presented, we don't know what else is behind it yet. From what you know, are you concerned that they may not be allowed to play in the Champions League either next season or the season after?
No, instinctively, I'm not concerned about it. I believe that if you really go into this and study it everywhere, you can find this type of... I'm not saying it's a confirmed misdemeanor that City have had, but this type of thing, let's just leave it at that, at clubs all around Europe. Yeah. I mean, if you look at Bayern Munich, just to give one example, part of their ownership is one of their sponsors. So what is the difference? You know, I feel as if it could open up for UEFA when they do this, a big can of worms that will be hard to put back in the box afterwards.
It doesn't look particularly good though, does it? I mean, when their emails coming out saying that we're going to tie UEFA into a legal sort of tangle, so it takes them years to get out of it.
Yeah, but you can understand why they would react like that. I mean, it does feel, I'm speaking now as much as a fan, as a journalist, but it does feel as if City coming to the top table of English football, as they have done, it has definitely, and I thought FFP was to prevent clubs getting into financial difficulties.
But it feels the other way around, doesn't it? It's just trying to keep the door closed on newcomers.
Just round the corner, I know it's not Premier League and I know it's not Champions League, but Bolton Wanderers are fighting for their lives as a local football club, and that's because they've spent money that they haven't got. It happened to Stockport County. Obviously, yeah. My expertise is in the local area. They've gone down to two tiers below the Football League because they overspent to be ambitious, and they get 6,000 crowds in and out trying to find their way back into the Football League. They should be a Football League team. Portsmouth, Leeds United, all the examples you want to give, and yet City have an owner who comes in, who invests, who is debt free, who just purely wants to invest in his own company, is denied from doing that. And the fear is, and I know this isn't really the intricacies of what the laws are, but if you look at let's say tomorrow you, Sam Matterface, won the Euro Millions and won 250 million or something, and I don't know what team you support, but you know, you will support a team and you will think, right, well, I'm going to donate 100 million. FFP prevents you from doing that. Is that right? You know, if a benefactor comes along in Oldham and says, I want to invest
Euro
my
millions
money.
Winners, actually, especially ones that maybe invested in Newport and others, who might be thinking it might be a better idea if I didn't have done that in the first place.
It may be. But if they supported Premier League clubs, they might get away with it to a certain extent with the smaller clubs. But if they did that at the top table and started to challenge the Uniteds, the Liverpools, the Barcelonas, they'd be urging FFP to do the same to them. How can that be right?
Well, we'll find out in the fullness of time, but thank you very much for your enthusiasm. Just tell us where your podcast is again, in your YouTube blog.
On YouTube, just search Ian Cheeseman Forever Blue, and similarly on your normal podcast platforms, Ian Cheeseman Forever Blue. I'm everywhere.
Lovely to see you. And it is a real shame that local radio has changed so much, especially seeing as you and I both started out doing that, and it was part of a golden period, I think, of local commercial radio, when we were lucky enough to be involved in it, because there were so many around the country and so many people we've had on this pod that have gone on to be commentators for national television stations. We talked to Darren Fletcher, John Murray, Jim Proudfoot recently last week, Ian Dark, all started in radio first, and it's a real shame that there's not as many opportunities for people now as there was before. That's it. We're all back together next week. Michelle will be with us once again. Sorry about the logistics this week, which meant that Michelle wasn't able to be with us. Hopefully, thanks to Cheltenham, we'll all be as rich as Alexis Sanchez. We've probably doing about the same amount of work, but I won't hold our breath. Although you have been studying all day, haven't you, today? So you never know.
I've been studying for about 2 weeks. Honestly, I said to my wife earlier, I said, you know, when you're doing a GCSE exam and you've done so much cramming,
you didn't compare it to that, did you? You surely didn't compare it to that.
Because when you say, look, I can't do any more, what I don't know now, I'll never know. And it's the same with my Cheltenham preparation. So if I'm not rich by the end of the week, it's not for the want of trying.
We're going to win absolutely nothing. We're going to be like Tottenham. Right, OK, we'll see you next week.
Subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all major podcast platforms. This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks.